The espresso in Paris always tastes like burnt copper when you're waiting for the guillotine to drop. And that morning at Cabinet Lefebvre, the air was thick with the scent of expensive cologne and cheap betrayal. I sat at my drafting table, my fingers tracing the edge of the CAD monitor, watching Marc-Antoine walk past me without a glance. The same man who, 6 hours earlier, had whispered that my Moroccan grit was the only thing keeping this firm from collapsing. He didn't look like a savior now. He looked like a predator who had just finished his meal, the blueprint for the Casablanca waterfront project. My project, my 3 years of sleepless nights and desert dust memories, was sitting on the CEO's desk with Marc-Antoine's signature on the title block. I felt the heat rise from my neck, a slow rhythmic thrumming of a heart that had finally stopped believing in meritocracy. I didn't scream, and I didn't cry, because in this office, emotion is an admission of guilt. I just reached into my handbag and felt the cold, hard casing of the digital recorder. We were past the point of professional disagreement. We were in the realm of survival, and I had learned long ago that when the French elite invite you to the table, they usually intend for you to be the main course. I remember the way he looked at me during the gala, his hand ghosting over the small of my back as he promised that our partnership was the future of the firm, a spicy little secret that kept the late nights in the studio from feeling like soul-crushing labor. I was the exotic asset, the one with the instinct for North African markets, and I let myself believe that the entanglement was mutual. But the moment the Casablanca contract was signed, the mask didn't just slip, it shattered. I found the emails on the shared drive, hidden in a folder labeled maintenance. He hadn't just stolen the design. He had drafted a memo to HR, outlining my erratic behavior and unauthorized access to sensitive files to ensure I'd be blacklisted the moment I complained. The backstabbing started to feel like a cold breeze. At first you shiver, then you just go numb. I watched him laugh with the board members through the glass partition, his white teeth flashing like a warning signal, and I realized that the only way out of this cage was to burn the zoo down. I had the recording of our 2 a.m. strategy session where he admitted to padding the invoices by 40%. It wasn't just a workplace dispute anymore. It was a hostage situation where I held the pin to the grenade. By noon, the atmosphere was suffocating. My colleagues, people I'd shared tagine and tea with, were suddenly very interested in their spreadsheets, avoiding my gaze like I was a ghost already haunting the hallways. That's the scariest part, the adaptability. I found myself smiling back at the receptionist, filing my reports, and even nodding at Marc-Antoine when he finally deigned to acknowledge my existence with a curt, professional nod. I was becoming the very thing I hated, a silent architect of my own ruin, waiting for the perfect moment to strike. I walked into his office without knocking, the door clicking shut behind me with a finality that made his head snap up. He started to give me that practiced, condescending, "we'll talk later" look, but I didn't give him the chance. I placed my phone on his mahogany desk, the screen glowing with the playback interface of the invoice confession. The color drained from his face so fast it was almost cinematic, a pale, sickly gray that matched the Parisian sky outside. I told him, without a tremor in my voice, that I wasn't leaving touched or untouched. I was leaving with his reputation in my pocket. He tried to reach for the phone, but I was faster. The hypervigilance I'd developed over months of gaslighting finally paying off. The ending wasn't a clean break. It was a slow-motion explosion. He didn't beg. He negotiated, offering me a settlement that would have bought a villa in Marrakesh. But I didn't want the money. I wanted the signature. I made him sign a confession of authorship for the Casablanca project, a document that would live in my lawyer's safe, ready to be triggered the second my name was mentioned in a negative light. I walked out of that glass and steel tomb with my head high, leaving him sitting in the dark, a king of a hollow empire. I survived it, but the version of me that entered that firm died somewhere between the stolen blueprints and the midnight lies. I look in the mirror now and I don't see the ambitious girl from Rabat. I see a woman who knows exactly how much a soul costs in the Parisian market, and exactly how to break the hands that try to take it. The backstabbing is normal now, but the difference is, I'm the one holding the knife.